School gardens, community vegetable patches, fish farms and tanks, the urban farming movement takes all kinds of forms. And there are so many great things that happen when people grow food in cities. There are educational opportunities, you use less energy and transport, the plants help clean the air, and it just plain feels good for people to be closer to their food. But scientist Caleb Harper believes that indoor urban farming can do something more. It can actually create the best tasting, most nutritious, least energy intensive crops anywhere. Now, I admit this can sound ridiculous. Great farms are all about the character they have, their particular blend of sun and air and soil, and a warehouse full of lettuce beds has no character. But Caleb is a researcher at MIT and the leader of a group of nerd farmers. They work on something they call the food computer, which can closely detect and allow you to adjust the growing conditions of any plant in the room. And he thinks this is the future of urban farming, and maybe just the future of food. Thanks so much for joining us today, Caleb.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So there are so many things that make a great farm great, right? You start with the farmers, of course, but also the kind of sunlight it gets, the composition of the soil, all kinds of stuff. But you're trying to bring all those characteristics to growing plants indoors.
Exactly. If someone says, the best tomato in the world comes from Tuscany on the north side of the slope with a happy cow next door, you know, we try to factor in all of the, what we would call biotic or abiotic stress, most people would call climate, that caused those specific genetics to create the flavor that they like. And so we try to figure that out, and then in the process, use the least amount of resources, less water, less energy, less nutrition loss from transportation, so that we can make a good product that's healthy and available in our cities.
I assume that means you also like pipe in audio of the happy cow mooing, just to make sure that's covered.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of my freshmen that come into my lab at MIT, the first thing they want to do is put the plants through Mozart and then put the plants through, like, Tupac. And see, and you know who wins between Mozart and Tupac? Tupac, because it's all about microvibrations, which in the natural world you'd call wind. So you actually need wind inside of these environments, because the plant then gets stressed by the wind so that it can start to grow taller, so that it's morphologically correct, or you just say it's formed correctly. And so those microvibrations of Tupac really help it out.
That's incredible. So, okay, so once you have all these factors, and I imagine the more you do it, the more you learn what these factors are.
Mm-hmm. That's a bleeding edge of science. Like, we've never before had the ability to gather so much data so cheaply. And we've also never before had the ability to process so much data so cheaply. Now, with advancements in robotics, advancements in sensors technology, and data processing, we can really start to get at some kind of basic science that maybe we haven't been able to do before.
Yeah. This is probably going to drive you crazy, because this is going to be like a dumb thing to say.
No.
But it's almost like, oh, you're creating a virtual reality for
right.
these plants that is
no,
in fact
totally
reality.
No, that's totally true. It's not dumb at all, because, you know, one of the things that limits agriculture and agricultural science is seasons. And so we go season to season. We try to make changes. We select for genetics that did well in that season. But we have a lot of kind of asynchronistic or non-categorized variables during that season. So imagine that you could run the season 10,000 times. And if you could run the season 10,000 times, you could try all different kinds of things that you would have done and see which one worked out the best without having to wait, 10,000 years. And so it's really that idea of how could we make agriculture and plant science more like computing?
So how are we going to get to the point where this happens on every other block in every other city? How will this scale up?
So right now, I think it's bubbling in a kind of a entrepreneurial realm. So there's a lot of startups, and I mean Japan, China, Europe, United States, hundreds of millions of dollars going into this. But what I think needs to happen, what my group is trying to be a part of, is the sharing of this knowledge so that it can scale up. And so there are so many unanswered questions. We need trillions of data points. We need 100,000 images to do any machine learning. And so we've taken all of our plans, all of our software, all of our hardware, and made it open source. And what that means is you can access it for free, you can use it for whatever you want, and you contribute as part of the project. kind of like a citizen science for, let's call it, horticulture or botany. In that process, there are now, after the last year and a half, people in 40 countries around the world contributing to our project, contributing either code or they're growing in the bots, whatever they want to grow, whatever excites them, they grow. We're able to collect data on that, and it starts to kind of build up this data set that we can use.
Yeah.
And it's really the way of the future. When you look at Tesla open sourcing their patents so that more infrastructure can be built, part of that network economy. Apple open sourcing their app developer language. This is because of our networked world. And there's never been a time in human history where you can get more people working on a single problem if you share that infrastructure. And I don't think anything is more important than how are we going to feed all the people in the world with the least amount of resources and the most amount of amazing flavors and good nutrition.
Well, this sounds incredible. And good luck to you. But I think that means good luck to all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a nerd farmer inside of all of us. I think of it this way. A lot of us think, oh, we don't have a green thumb. Well, what if a green thumb was a digital asset? What if I could download a farmer's eye that took 60 years to cultivate, that beautiful eye that can tell you what's wrong with a plant? Whereas you might come into this saying, oh, my house plants are always dying. I don't know what to do with them. Well, what if we could make that a program? What if you literally downloaded tomato, and that tomato meant that you put a seed in an environment that was created by a master gardener or by a master horticulturalist or by a chef that knew what to do to this plant in the northern part of Spain to get the most beautiful expression of flavor, but we captured that as a recipe. So you downloaded it, you grew it, and all of a sudden you're in the Basque region in your apartment.
Right. That's incredible. What other technologies do you see right now in terms of farming and agriculture that, you know, us as lay people don't know about?
Well, I think in a bigger context, you would just say that what I'm seeing as a general shift is this kind of coming together of biologic and digital technologies. For example, rapid sequencing, the ability to get to the genetics of whatever we're interested in very quickly. And then now the ability to edit those genetics. So there's something called CRISPR, and CRISPR is a system where it just makes it very easy and very cheap to edit something within a genome. And I know, you know, this might be something that people are concerned about, but when you think about the fact that everything we've eaten in our entire life has been genetically modified because it's been trait selected for hundreds of years down to become the corn that we eat today.
Breeding sweeter and sweeter corn or something like that.
Exactly, or bigger or whatever it is we were looking for. What CRISPR is the ability to do what used to take 100 years or 10 years in the lab in a day. And so that can radically change what we're able to do with agriculture in the short term. I think there's also some amazing things going on in the microbiome. I don't know if you're following the conversation about human microbiome, but in the plant world, we're saying root microbiome. So what should be in the soil maybe that isn't there from the methods of farming that we've been using that hasn't cultivated that microbiome, or maybe it was never there in the first place, or for whatever reason. What microbes, what bacteria would we want to put back into the soil that would cause a much better plant to come out? And even more radical than that, people are starting to engineer microbes. So if you know the process that you're trying to help, you can literally engineer a helper microbe to go into the soil to cause, you know, a more efficient, better, however you qualify it, plant. So I think these technologies and then obviously things like microsatellites and drones, getting a lot more data on our fields. So there's a startup recently that has created more data about in-field farming in the last 5 years than the USDA has in its entire existence. And so I think that's part of that cheaper sensors, cheaper processing power. So we're getting a very described field. We're now getting the ability to modify very quickly within genome, trait select using CRISPR. And then we're looking at how would we intentionally design the soil with microbes.
This is fascinating. Thank you so much for coming in, Caleb.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Caleb Harper is the director of the Open Agriculture Initiative at the MIT Media Lab.